welcome allies, backstage co-animators of the desirable, lovely segue from Mitch and John Almeida, wonderful, wonderful teammates. And I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So in regard to our Michaela Gaston and my Friday the 13th talk, some of which you may have heard, but at the very end, I love working with her because it's call and response. And it's like, okay, Ami, we need accountability as the sine qua non of democracy. Can you call it in? And so she did. She called in Obatalan, Olodumare, Saturn presiding. And as I approached the hearings, will people watch? Will they do a good enough job? You know, is Benny Thompson charismatic enough? No, never mind that. Benny Thompson has Obatala behind him. I invite us to see that. The House January 6th chair presiding with effective solemnity and dignity. You know, really cathartic story craft, pretty great. So we here are hearing aids for the January 6th epiphany. Let's not forget it was 12th night hearings. Speak to the weary, a word that will rouse them, saith Isaiah, a quote I first heard from today's guest. We are welcoming longtime ally of democracy, mytho-political word wizard, diagnostician, mentor James Yeager, born into a Texas ACLU populist tradition. And here we are at this rising solstice tide, little sidebar. Deborah Felmuth and I will be, we are preparing a feast of music and metaphor, the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world for this Monday's solstice event. It's a donation only, coyotenetworknews.com. You can find out more about that. So it is the rising solstice tide because it's when Legba, power of language, hands the baton to the moon, incarnational agent of the Cancerian solstice realm. And she is woofy. She is aroused. The women are aroused. We'll hear in a moment how Beto is within 5% of tyrannical dingbat Greg Abbott because the women are aroused. So encouraging us to incantational magic to invite in the protectors of democracy that we all may wake up and dance our way back into the choreography of creation. Welcome, Jamie Yeager.
Caroline Casey, so good to be here.
Splendid. So there's much on our table. But I just stirring with your Texas self, I had a fun memory of my friend Luann telling this story. She said to her Texas mom, "Mom, I have something difficult to tell you." And her mom said, "Either you're a Republican or you're gay." And Luann said, "Well, I'm not a Republican." She was like, "Thank God." Anyway, I love that little Texas vignette, right? So there we go. So there's much on our work table, and the solstice Saturnine sacrament of accountability as the sine qua non for democracy. So how are you feeling about the hearings?
I think they're extremely well constructed. The fact that almost all the witnesses are Republicans cuts out the usual cry of this is a partisan witch hunt. These are all people that worked with Trump and knew him and in some cases enabled the turn in the Republican Party toward the lawless indiscipline where we are today. But we're getting a clear picture of one thesis, which is that Trump knew everything about what was going to happen on January 6th, and much of it was his idea in the first place. And they're not losing the focus on that, every one of their witnesses is tending toward proving or illustrating that the highest regions of the American government were leading a revolt against an election result that they didn't like. And I'm sure you've seen the same articles I have about how the horror is not only that this happened in the first place, but it was a dress rehearsal for what they're going to try to do in 2024 with disqualifying duly elected results, duly election results, and substituting completely notional, oh, well, we should have won that district. So here's some electors we're going to nominate instead of the ones the people voted for. So the part of the urgency is accountability for past action, but at least half of it needs to be accountability to prevent a repetition and an expansion of what was attempted to be done on January the 6th.
And even the 2022 election looming, I forgot however many, 484 days away, as crucial. But you'd mentioned backstage that Beto O'Rourke is within 5% of Greg Abbott because the women are aroused.
And the young people. That's
the young people.
Mostly on the back of the gun insanity of the position of the Texas governor, but also on the back of the abortion insanity of the Texas governor and the party he represents. So, yeah, our guys, our allies, demographic allies, are ready to fight about this and ought to be. So I think we're going to see greater turnout than can result in a fixed election. This is what they do in Florida and Texas in particular, is get an election result by hook or crook to be close and then steal it. And the way we counter that is by turning out and doing something. So anybody that's got a spare $5 might pick a Democratic candidate who's kind of in a weak district in either Texas or Florida and send it on over there to them, because elections are the tool that the people have in addition to agitation, presence, conspiracy in the sense of breathing together toward a more civilized country.
Right. And what would you say to, I don't know if you caught the end of a wonderful, wonderful ally, Mitch Jezevich's show right before us, and his last caller was like, well, first we can dispute the phrase. He said, any other country would have locked Trump up the next day. And it's like, that's not true. Because, you know, Brazil, the Saudi Arabia, you know, North Korea.
Hungary.
Anyway, but.
Yeah, a lot of them.
But, I'm sorry, say what?
Hungary. There's been an anti-democratic revolution in Hungary where the president of Hungary should have been tried. But anyway,
yes,
going
no,
on that,
and that's
your point, and I agree.
Right, and that's where CPAC was with the Hungarian dictator as one of their guest speakers.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's dangerous, and just to bring before us all,
but we're not
the
hopeless,
question,
Caroline.
Hmm.
Go ahead.
We're not hopeless. No, and Mitch was saying, you know, took time for the investigation. So many of us might have felt impatient, but are you, you know, in alignment with the deliberation, a word that comes from Libra, the deep, thorough investigation, and that now they're ready?
I do believe that. A friend of mine asked me, well, we're going to have hearings this month, but then what? I said, then come the indictments. And then come the trials. And at this point, we don't even need to know who's getting indicted for what or who's getting tried for what, because that's going to be what keeps this in the news all the way up to the election. This is a fire. This inquiry into what actually happened on January 6th is a fire that is burning down Republican resistance to the facts. And the American people have an opportunity, it remains to be seen how firmly they will grasp it, but have an opportunity to repudiate people who are basically trying to reanimate the Confederacy. You know, the Constitution that half of those people swear allegiance to is a Confederate Constitution, not the United States Constitution. And we need to get the union back to being reunified. And the 2022 elections are our chance to demonstrate that the American people as a whole are in favor of a woman's right to choose, are in favor of gun safety laws that will stop the massacre of our young children. and various other laws that the Republicans don't even want to talk about. So I learned as a Texas liberal, in a Texas liberal family, you go and work every election for the candidates that you have. First of all, in primary, you vote for the ones that you want. And then in the general election, you vote for who you've got on the Democratic line, because that's how it works in this country, unfortunately. So we're stuck with the two-party thing. We got to live with it. And so 2022 is an opportunity. Everybody lives in some congressional district to make sure that they have a plan to vote and that their registration is up to date. And you go out and vote for whoever is the closest to what you think you want your government to be doing. It doesn't have to be identical with what you think you want the government to be doing. But whoever's the closest, you vote for that guy or that woman. And that's doing your duty as a citizen. And we want to turn out for this election.
Yeah, it wants to be a rousing trickster, rising, right? And that's, you know, when I was being interviewed by Worthy Group, the School of Mythopoetics, but the young interviewer, not that young, I mean, in his 30s or 40s, but said, well, how does trickster deal with politics? Me, poets, and most of my peers, we eschew politics as corrupt, so we choose to not participate. What's your response to that? And I go, my first response is, okay. My second is vote, very close to devote. And then saying, you know, it's dangerous. And I've been spending a lot of fiction, historic fiction time in late 30s Germany and Poland, and it's useful. It's bleak, but to know how close it was, I didn't really understand when the Nazis invaded France, Paris, and the French government really rolled over. Everyone was so sure that the German assault on Britain would succeed, right? That it was like, it could have been an alternative thing, right? And then I said to young ally, I go, you know, in late 30s Germany, there was all this New Age stuff, astrology and yoga and chakra balancing, and they too said, no, politics, no, we are spiritual people, but they were oblivious to what was brewing around them. So, you know, bringing all values into play, but absolutely dedicated. And then to toss back to you, which you're addressing, but the conundrum before us, the de-delusioning of a significant proportion of our populace, because so there was the primaries just now where a number of Trump-backed beings one, and it's like, oh. So we do want to dissolve and reimagine that, but any thoughts on de-delusioning the populace, on stage, backstage, effective action, backstage prayers, whatever, how to de-delusion the populace?
Well, it takes constant effort, and the first part of it is to not be illusioned ourselves, and despair is an illusion. It is not built into the structure of the universe. Spirituality is built into the structure of the universe. And we must always be consulting the sources of the spiritual power that everybody feels whenever they look at something beautiful, or like a sunset or a puppy, you know, that the spirit is within us. We need to connect with the spirit in other people. Politics is a public act. It's not part of my private life. It's part of what I do because I live where I live and I have people around me, neighborhoods, friends, acquaintances. We're all in this together. And if I sit on my hands, even if I'm praying at the time, when it's time for me to be walking down to the polls, I am not serving the spiritual unity of the universe by ignoring this. You know, it's kind of the public plumbing of life, right? There are taxes. We have to figure out how much, who gets taxed, and what we spend the money on. And that's what politics is for, is to control the legislatures and executives who make those kind of decisions on our behalf. And we're lucky to have as much, or some would say as little, participation in that process as we do in the United States of America. Everybody else in the world thinks the Americans have a pretty good deal in terms of being able to influence public life. Now, there is all of this corruption, both money and moral corruption, that is clogging up the electoral process. And these hearings are about demonstrating clearly to the American people that half of what they've been told about what happened on January 6th is delusional, and that these are, in fact, the facts, that there was a coup. It was not successful, but it was attempted, and it was directed by the occupant of the White House at that time. So,
and it was pretty clearly
the quest for. Yeah, go ahead. No, you.
Oh no. Yeah, I guess we have a slight delay. I'll aspire to not talk over you, but you know, from the latest, you know, investigation of the tours being given to the people to show them the tunnels and the bridges and the adjoining buildings of the Capitol on January 5th, and then
that was
some
a military
of those people,
operation they were doing.
Yeah, right, and murderous, and because the next on those videos are people saying, you know, I have a spear made out of the American flag, and we're going to kill Nancy Pelosi and hang Mike Pence, and you, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, will get you too. I mean, it was murderous.
Yeah. Still is. Those people haven't gone away. They're just hanging out in Idaho or whatever. But we, who are not like that, can't just throw up our hands. We have to get together. And your show is one of the great places where that call to togetherness always goes out and is always renewed, because I have to renew my spirit and my spiritual connection every day. And I know that most of your listeners do that as a conscious effort. And then we have to walk a certain way where we're trying to be aligned with the essential order of the universe. And humankind has evolved various devices over time to manifest the order of the universe. One of the important ones in American history was officially, legally giving up on the idea that one man can own another. There's not supposed to be slavery anywhere, anytime, not even economic slavery, which is going to be a big issue in this century. But so the tasks are always there, and there are always people of goodwill who dedicate themselves to bringing to consciousness, the consciousness of everybody, the story that we must continue to influence how public life is conducted with decency and honesty. And when it's not conducted that way, you have to have something like these hearings to bring it home to people that this is the greatest threat to American democracy since the Civil War. And we have to show up for repelling that assault. And we repel it legally by having proper procedures, a properly constituted committee of the House of Representatives doing the work that it's doing, and us doing the work of being conscious and reverent and aware of our place in the public consciousness.
So that everything, the Civil War and Texas, brings us to Juneteenth, the 19th of June. Yeah, let's hold forth on Juneteenth, James Yeager.
All right. Well, it's a particularly Texas thing because A ship got to the port of Galveston on June 19th, 1865, carrying the message to the previously enslaved black people of Texas that they had been freed by the Emancipation Proclamation, which was January the something, 1862. And because of communications and the Confederacy. The people in black people in Texas did not know that this had happened. And so there was a spontaneous, so by Juneteenth itself in 1865, Texas is under occupation by Union forces. There is no more Confederacy, even though the last band of unreconstructed and non-surrendered Confederacy guys were trying to make it to Texas to get to Mexico to start, keep fighting a guerrilla war. And the Union put a stop to that. So the significance of Juneteenth is that a significant body of Texans suddenly discovered that freedom was a personal thing, and it had arrived with the Union Army back into Texas. And when I was a boy in Houston, I learned about Juneteenth from a lady who worked for my parents. And there was kind of an underground, unofficial, not mentioned on the newspaper or on the radio, celebrations that would go on in the black churches, in the black neighborhoods of Houston. And they would have a picnic and celebrate the memory of the time that freedom was made manifest in a Texas where it had long been repressed. Because, of course, the whole idea of the Texas Republic was that it was a slave republic. And the official vision of Texas as promulgated at the Alamo and other places never wants to admit that. Just as the neo-Confederates of the Republican Party nowadays never want to admit that the Civil War was about slavery. But it was, and legally slavery was defeated. Now, there's a whole continuous story of how it got restored or reanimated or resold and isn't over yet. But on Juneteenth, it was a holiday. It was a jubilee, which had a particular technical meaning in the ceremonies of the black churches at the time of the end of the Civil War, a jubilee. And so it is a great undersung holiday throughout the South, but in Texas in particular.
Right. And so everything is, you know, humming, all of the resonance. And I also want to bring up January 6th. I remember gazing at that date in the fall of 2020, and the 2020 election was humming with the 2000 election, because those are the only two elections where Mercury was stationing retrograde on the day of the election. And in 2020, I said, oh, well, you know, what will that be? The election that's never over, perhaps. And then looking at this one, going, ooh, well, it'll take a while. It'll take a while. And then, so loving Epiphany, Twelfth Night, January 6th, which happened to be, what is it? It's the Wednesday that's the certification of the votes or the Electoral College, right? And I go, Epiphany, well, there's a lot of, you know, spiritedness. It's when, Warnock was sworn in, and, you know, as well as this. But see, the Dementors have often, and I don't know if Steve Bannon does this on purpose, but they've often hoovered sacred dates, because the previous riot in Washington was December 12th, and that's the Virgin de Guadalupe Day, that's Santa Lucia Day, that's it's the birthday of many important friends. And we go, no, we can't let them hoover this. They can't hoover the election. They can't have January 6th. They can't have Twelfth Night and Epiphany. We're inhaling it back. It's when the Magi, the astrologers, arrived to go, there you have it, which has a kind of resonance now. And then, when we were talking backstage, about the delusion and all, and going, all right, well, thank goodness this call and response and Juneteenth humming, even more vital perhaps this year, going, January 6th, humming in its authentic integrity. And so inviting in, you know, if we don't know what to do, invite in, you know, help. And what is? And, you know, when we were talking about our backgrounds, you know, your dad, feel free to invoke your dad, an ACLU, you know, liberal progressive Texan, and my dad, who was a New Deal congressman working with FDR eons before I was born as his last child. But only after his death did I discover that my dad admired enormously fighting Robert La Follette, fighting Bob La Follette. And I brought him up, and just a little bit for people who don't know, and I'll toss it to you, Jamie. So Robert La Follette was a progressive politician and governor of Wisconsin. He developed a fierce opposition to corporate power and political corruption as a young man. Affiliated with the Republican Party for almost his entire career, La Follette worked in Congress as the governor of Wisconsin and in the U.S. Senate. His rousing oratory, support for progressive reforms, and frequent clashes with party leaders, both sides, earned him the nickname Fighting Bob. And then I was, this came to me on June 13th, and I go, well, when was Fighting Bob born? Oh, June 14th, 1855. And I go, oh, holy moly, it's the former guy's birthday as well. So Fighting Bob La Follette is kind of the antidote to the former guy.
Yes.
And his chart is humming, but feel free to hold forth on Fighting Bob La Follette and how prairie populism and what he represents is really humming now, and so is Bob's chart.
Well, yeah, and good for us that it is, because La Follette isn't very well known now. I pronounce it the way my mother did, Midwestern.
Okay, and, La Follette. That's good.
Right. I mean, they didn't know French, so they didn't get it right. But he was a great figure because he's kind of the transition from William Jennings Bryan and the prairie populists who wanted to oppose the gold monopoly of the East Coast with free silver from Nevada and other mining states in the West, which was a great threat to the mercantile class and was repressed. And so Bob comes along after that and starts working locally in Wisconsin. And when FDR gets elected in 32, he kind of had some plans in his back pocket about how to reform the United States government. And many of them were the result of the what was called the Wisconsin experiment. Some of the things that Bob La Follette had done as governor, or supported as congressman and senator, being brought to the national stage and animated by Franklin D. And the one that I remember the most is the Federal Trade Commission. The idea that the federal government was not only empowered, it had the duty of making sure that stuff that was sold to American people was actually what the label said it was, and that it was good for you to have it. And there was a huge Republican backlash against that. The idea that government should interfere in commerce? Nay, sir, nay, commerce must be king, was the reply. And having Bob La Follette as a progressive Republican, anti-corruption guy, anti-corporate guy, as his plan maker for a lot of the New Deal, was really canny of Roosevelt to adopt it, and not that it cut down the opposition any, because the same people that opposed it when La Follette did a local version certainly opposed it when Franklin tried to make it national. But the Wisconsin experiment is part of the intellectual history of the New Deal that I only know because I knew the world's oldest living liberal lobbyist at the time, who was from Wisconsin and came to Washington in 1934 to help pass the New Deal. So my personal history intersects with some of this stuff. But La Follette was an architect or a precursor, John the Baptist, to, if you'll pardon a little blasphemy, John the Baptist to Franklin D's savior. Not that my mother would let me talk about it that way, but anyway, that's how I think about it. So, yeah, the spirit of Bob La Follette, we need it now because it was based around cooperatives. I mean, agricultural cooperatives, milk cooperatives, you know, the whole dairy industry.
Right.
Preventing well,
hold
it
that
being
thought.
Dominated.
Hold.
Yeah. All right.
Hold that thought. We're going to jump right back in, right exactly where you are, after this very short musical break. Here we go.
She shook the constellation and dazzled them crossed his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his torches cry.
All get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and we are continuing our coverage of the hearings in a political and mythological way with our great guest, longtime ally, James Yeager. So, Jamie, you were right, or you were right at this crucial part. Again, fighting Bob La Follette, politics as well, agricultural reform. I think you were right in the middle of that sentence.
Cooperatives.
Cooperatives.
And electrical cooperatives, that was the other thing. Most of the Midwest was not yet on the electrical grid in 1932. And Wisconsin pioneered, well, not only Wisconsin in this case, the idea of farmers getting together and forming their own electrical cooperative instead of waiting for somebody else with Eastern money to come in and build those transmission lines. So that notion of citizen activism was built into the New Deal through the templates that the Follett had helped pioneer in Wisconsin. And that spirit of let's get us together and clean up the absence of progress that's being inflicted on us by faraway investors is part of what is animating the spirit of these hearings, is we're trying to clean up our democracy from what's been inflicted on it by the Murdochs and other media barons of the conservative world of, you know, factlessness and rebellion, just plain old rebellion. January the 6th, all this complaining about taxation and government and everything came down to, we're going to overthrow the American way of doing elections. And they're ready to do it again. Go ahead.
No, that's right. Lies, corruption, and cruelty, oh my. Lies, corruption, and cruelty, oh my. Right, into
right.
the cauldron, and into the cauldron, arrogance and insolence, into the cauldron, wherever they be, as compost for democracy. And we go, well, yeah, and then just the mythic backup, you know, cooperators are standing by. So Bob La Follette, born June 14th, so was the former guy, but Bob La Follette was born 1855. And So Uranus, which is I'm reluctant to let words go like radical and rebellion, because I grew up with those as very positive things, right? We'll play with that. But Uranus is, you know, again, uniqueness and the keeper of democracy and trickster genius. And it was in Taurus when Bob La Follette was born, and then again in the late 30s, early 40s. And so in America, we got the New Deal. In Europe, we got, you know, fascism. Now it's almost the reverse, you know, as a little kind of a deal. But our charts, our life dedication continue to hum even after humans have departed. And fighting Bob La Follette, La Follette's chart is humming. So he's born, just for fun of it, with Uranus at 18 degrees of Taurus. And Uranus this year, this summer, before, you know, unfolding before us, and you can join with Deborah Feldmuth and me on Monday night if you want. CoyoteNetworkNews.com will let you know how. But all this summer, Uranus will station, meaning it really wants our attention at that degree, which is where it was when Bob La Follette was born. And the image for that degree, there's metaphors for each degree of the zodiac. So it is prairie populism for sure. Its image is a new continent rising out of the ocean, the surge of new potential after crisis, new life emerging out of the infinite ocean of potential. We go, oh, that's great. All right, we're up for that. We root for that dynamic of, you know, humming and coming alive. And Bob La Follette, he was born on the day of the full moon just now. So that's humming. And he being Gemini, and we're at this time of Gemini handing the baton to the realm of Cancer, being voices for protection of life and kinship. And I just want to bring up, you know, from our friend Brer David Grimes, you know, who first gave me the Brer Rabbit quote. There was times when all the critters used to gather to sagacuate, just like there ain't been no hard times, like there ain't been no falling out, like they all remembered they were kin. And in Bob La Follette's chart, he's a Gemini. Oh, yeah, no, isn't that wonderful? Well, it's very humming right now. And in Bob La Follette's chart, we go, okay, you're a Gemini, incarnational agent of Mercury, you know, magician voice, you know. Where's Mercury when you were born, Bob? We go, oh, in Cancer, providing nourishment, protecting life, honoring kinship. Again, very Brer Rabbit. Oh, I'm so glad you said oh wow to Brer Rabbit. I don't know if you have you not heard that part, particular part.
Well, I have, but it's always good to be reminded. I mean, it's very powerful.
It's very wonderful. It's a sacred text. Yeah, I'm just going to say it again for fun. There was times when all the critters used to gather to sagacuate, like now, just like there ain't been no hard times, like there ain't been no falling out, like they all remembered they were kin. It should be on the back of every dollar bill. We
love
that.
Yeah, instead of in God we trust, remember we are kin. No kidding.
Yeah. So, Big Mama, mega woefully aroused, you know. Whoops, say it again. I'm sorry I talked over you. Here you go.
No,
back to you.
That's fine. I'll take you instead.
Okay. Okay. So we do... Okay. No, you go.
I see. Well, I just started a hair that I'm not sure I want to start, but I just said it's appropriate to have God on the United States currency because only something as powerful as God can keep money under control. You know, left to its own devices, it'll control us. And that's really the large, small D Democratic Party. Is how do the people not be controlled by the great big huge piles of money that are running around loose or being looted from the people? And it's why there's so much juice in politics. We got to deal with that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to dust off my a wonderful artisan on Etsy was making Harriet Tubman stamps that fit right on top of the $20 bill, so we could do it. We don't have to wait for Congress. We could go, poof, and there's Harriet Tubman, a much better thing, and it's legal. It's legal, all right? So you can stamp Harriet Tubman's face on your $20 bill, and the guy from Etsy made it so that it just fits just right. So I'm going to go get a stack of 20s and dust off my Harriet Tubman stamp. I think that's a great idea. Part of Big Mama, part of this, you know, humans have celebrated, you know, solstice and equinox, you know, for 25,000 years anyway. And as Noor Hall said, deliberate celebration of the change of season stirs the creative powers of the psyche. And we go, okay. So always for 25,000 years, you know, it is the messenger, Mercury, handing the baton, you know, to Moon, protection of life. It's where the earliest form of human theater, you know, O literal and symbolic light of sun, come on in and illuminate this writing or this painting at the back of the cave. This is the story our community wants to bring alive. So it's still there with us. You know, what's the story we want to bring alive? And then this particular solstice, we go, oh, well, I think the time of woofy protection of life, what a, you know, in the nick of time, let's have her, him, within all of us, you know, bound onto the world stage. It's really the incarnational time of Big Mama. And so as detectives, we go, all right, the sun enters Cancer on June 21st. We're meeting Trickster Council on Monday, the night before, Midsummer Night's Eve. And that's why we say, well, okay, well, where's the moon? We go, ooh, she's rising in the east in Aries with Jupiter. She's woofy, and she's got stories. You know, and I don't know if you, I think I sent this to you, and I love it, and I think I send it to everybody, you know, wonderful poem, you know, let's give the police to the grandmothers. Oh, it's so beautiful. Right, again, sane, reverent common sense, against all odds, but desirable, desirable. It's no time to hold back on dreams, right? It's a wonderful, wonderful poem. I'm pretty sure I have it posted on my, well, Facebook for sure, and also I think at coyotenetworknews.com, but it's beautiful. Right, and then now, you know, and however you want to kind of honor this, here we are now, and it is a moon Pluto conjunction in Capricorn. In Greek astrology, which is tends to be gloomy, but the moon is the people. And so we borrow from everything, including classical astrology, and we go, moon Pluto. The people are aroused. The earliest image for the moon in Capricorn was the Council of Grandmothers dedicated to the next seven generations. We go, well, they're convening. They're convening, and that's great. And they make a quirky angle to the sun in Gemini. So as many people and callers to Mitch last show, you know, said, well, this has taken so long and just whatever. And it's like, I mean, I often tell people, you know, about, you know, scheduling things with myself. I go, you know, readings happen at the perfect time. And then I go, by God, I made up the truth. It is. And so now, in a sense, if we kind of relax into our dance with the larger dynamic, it's the sun in Gemini with a deep connection to powerful protection of life. And it does square Neptune. So illusion, delusion. Both on the table, delusion comes from deludo, out of the game. You know, illusion in etymology is not a bad thing. It's in ludo, in the game. We are in the game by participating and dreaming the desirable world into being. In actual incarnational, you know, reality, like, you know, making it actually better. And there is... yeah, for all beings, right? So there is a backstage, all beings, all earth, democratic animism, you know, there's so much on the line. And wherever we want to go, the conundrums, many conundrums, which again is where we call in, you know, grace that is wiser than our own. The Ukraine is a huge conundrum, you know, compassion, organizing, good, weapons, well, bad, but you know, but it is a true conundrum, and you know, anything you might say to address that, to the conundrum, or just to toss it back into mystery. But what are your thoughts about the Ukrainian conundrum?
Well, being sort of an accidental military historian, I can say that war is always a cry of complete defeat at the moment it begins. And the United States learned this most clearly under Bush Minor when we were defeated at the moment we began to fight. And everybody that I knew could see that. It just took a while for the generals and the Congress critters and the people who ran the president to figure it out. So in the case of Ukraine, it's an act of desperation on the part of a dying Putin. And it's utterly like Trump would have done things. It's like, if I'm going out, I'm going to knock everything over. I'm going to make sure a bunch of people suffer. And the suffering is the point of starting that war. So Putin, you know, had his army, which he thought was a lot stronger than it is, and he underestimated the resistance power of the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian democracy. Oddly enough, in 100 and whatever it is days, the massive force has still not won. And so the conundrum for those of open hearts is we have to resonate in tune with the sorrow and destruction that the Ukrainian people have and uprooting that the Ukrainian people have had to put up with. And the weak, puny, terrible tools of war are the only thing that, the power structure can think of to oppose other weapons with. And we've made this failed experiment thousands of times in the 25,000, whatever it is, years of human consciousness. And it's being, again, happening. You and I talked off stage about the Brecht play, Mother Courage, which is written in the wake of World War One, about, you know, the grandmothers who lost their sons and sons-in-law, grandsons in the Great War, in an utterly futile cause to try and prop up a king. And that's what this war is. It's an utterly futile attempt to prop up the king of Russia. And I will not advance his lifetime by one single day. He will still go home when God calls him, like all of us do. But in the meantime, he's destroying this neighboring country because he feels so puny at not being able to keep the great Russian Empire that Stalin had. And all we can do, as I say, is radiate our compassion for those who are suffering in this war and do everything we can to stop the Russians where they are and get this thing over with as fast as can be done. So that's what I'd tell KPFA about that.
Yes, well, you know, I used to say all war is a failure of imagination, and then I, aspiring to heed my own counsel, go, if all war is a failure of imagination, then all peace is a triumph of imagination. And it behooves us not to believe or outsource our authority, but to prime the pump of, like, desirable impossible, you know, may this solstice tide, mm-hmm. may all mothers, may the true Mother's Day, you know, creed, you know, rise up, you know, in all people, regardless of gender assignment, going, protection of life, you know, across borders, you know, Russia, Ukraine, everywhere, like, enough of this nonsense. There's been enough desertion and putting down of weapons, you know, and just going, I'm not going to do this. I am withdrawing my complicity in this cruelty. And we just want to see that tipping into effective influence, going just, again, not outsourcing, not believing it, just that would be good. That's one way to kind of view this dynamic. And again, the trickster quality going, all right, I want to come back to when I had when I was part of the Committee for the Republic, which was lots of different kinds of people, and I was sort of the mythological mascot. But my friend John Henry, related to Patrick Henry, said that man's the most conservative man in the room. Go talk to him. So I did. And I will aspire to honor him by name, but he said, what do you know about Edmund Burke? And I go, oh, not much. And he said, well, this conversation about big government, small government is irrelevant. He said, Edmund Burke said, the more as citizens we cultivate responsible self-governance, the fewer outer rules or laws we need. And I go, well, that's very sensible. You know, the training of the cultivation of citizens, which we has been sorely lacking, but we want to just go, wouldn't that be good? You know, for all of us to define, like, what is it to be, you know, a citizen trickster, responsible participant, you know, dedicated to collective well-being, you know, and what is the purpose of government? Let's each define what we think government should do. And in the Saturn Uranus, it's like, well, it would be good if government was the responsible container that directed collective experiments, well, like the New Deal, on behalf of, you know, collective well-being. So I said to conservative guy, I go, you know, or he said, I said, I love that. I said, that's, you know, Taoism. That's, you know, astrology about authority and cultivating inside, you know, I think you and I coined the term, he who hesitates gets bossed, right? Either we inhale our authority or it's outsized. And the conservative, very lovable guy, said, Taoism, I love Taoism. I love astrology. I haven't been able to talk about it with my conservative friends. Let's go off. And we did. We went off, you know, arm in arm to go, you know, share a libation together. But I always remembered that. You know, what do you know about Edmund Burke? The more citizens cultivate responsible inner self-governance, the fewer outer rules we need. This would be good to spiral forth, don't you think?
Yes, because it starts from a premise of unity,
right,
that the people united will emanate cooperation with the actual order of things, the way things want to be. And, you know, I think that the simplicity of Burke's view it's a wonderful aspiration to have. Now, he was in reaction to the French Revolution and all of these laws about equality and so forth that the French Revolution instituted. All those English noblemen and those who spoke for them, like Burke, were against that stuff. They liked being noblemen. They didn't think it was a good idea for France to be abolishing noblemen and even removing the heads of some of the more recalcitrants. So Burke is part of a larger conversation that was going on at that time. But you're right. For you and me and our listeners right this minute, the idea of collaborative structure emanating cooperation with what is absolutely has to happen. And back to the hearings, we have two views about what happened on January the 6th. The factual one is being shown to us in a masterful way as the evidence is presented before the hearing and before the American people. And the illusory and delusory nature of the opposition to the factual narrative is being exposed again and again, because the American people are already pretty unified. I think it got up above 51% in a recent poll in the belief that, yeah, as a matter of fact, Trump did commit criminal acts in the White House. And I think that the number of people who agree with that statement has never been as high as it is today. And that is a springboard toward flushing out some of the corrupt ideas from the system and those who bear them, if they're, what they did approaches the level of treason, which did indeed happen on a vast number of cases, you know, and start to try to clean that stuff up so that the cleaning up becomes a renaissance. I mean, Trump left us with the heritage of this horrible economic health crisis called COVID. He made it worse deliberately by not taking it seriously when it started. And we're still paying the price for that, and we're going to have to recover from that economically, socially. This is a generation of school children who are being scarred not only by shootings, but by the great hiatus in their lives that was created when the schools had to shut down for reasons of public health. So there'll be a renaissance from that. There'll be a renaissance as a result of resisting those who would overthrow the United States government. But it's going to take some time, as you said earlier, and it's going to take the help of all of us of goodwill, getting together both spiritually and with our hands and hearts to work on making this better.
Right. And aside from my simple fragment of Edmund Burke as given to me by a conservative conversation person, so the more citizens cultivate responsible self-governance, the fewer rules and laws we need, except for corporations and tyrants who have no self-discipline and are possessed by hungry ghosts destroying life.
They
need rules and Saturn. They need accountability, right? And the Koch brothers and Fred Koch's money coming from Stalin and Hitler, you know, is still at work here. I mean, there's nefarious up to no goodness. But absolutely, we say, because we are friends of their souls, we are friends of their accountability, indictment, and restraint, and to be sent to their quiet rooms until they learn manners, which could be quite a while. So any other, you know, woofy blessing that you want to spiral forth in our last minute here?
Yeah, the lesson of Texas liberalism that I learned by under my mother and father when we were being governed by segregationists was you try hard every time, every day. And every once in a while, you get a victory. And it may be 30 years. But in the meantime, you turned out, you did your duty, you showed up, you talked to other people, you helped advance the interests of the community by your community involvement with your neighbors. And the more you do that, the more you make victory possible in an electoral sense coming down the pike. That's it.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Jamie Yeager. Thank you always, Kirsten Thomas. Great board up. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. We are dissolving Mob Mind and spiraling out Br'er Rabbit. All right, thank you, Jamie. Woof, woof.